Hello, this is episode number 34B, a supplemental episode of the Serious About Security podcast for April 10th, 2013. On this episode, we're going to talk about Bitcoins, which we talked about fairly extensively on Monday, but we actually are joined by Doug Couch, who has a Bitcoin. I'm also joined by Keith Watson and Mike Hill, and I'm Preston Wiley. So we actually have some greater insight on Bitcoins because we know somebody who actually has one.
So, Doug, why don't you start by talking a little bit about how you got this and what you plan to do with it and some other thoughts you have on Bitcoins in general.
All right. Well, just to start out with, basically I heard more about Bitcoins. Originally, I heard about Bitcoins in relation to how it worked, some of the theories and some of the potential security implications at DEF CON conference a couple years ago. And it was people who were trying to apply their computing power and their encryption techniques to try to hack it or undermine it in some fashion. And I don't really think that anybody had any specific good results there, but there were a lot of different attempts and some sort of discussions about what it meant. I got further involved when my son Wes started mining Bitcoins himself, and I think he did it just sort of as an aside. It was he's interested in computers as well, and he built his own special purpose gaming machine, which was interestingly enough fairly well outfitted to do the Bitcoin mining with the graphics video card and everything. He was using the GPU. At the time that he was doing it, and even still today to some extent, the electricity necessary to do the Bitcoin mining sometimes costs more than the results of the Bitcoin mining. But since he didn't necessarily have to pay for his electricity at his apartment, he went ahead and went for it anyway, used it as supplemental heat for his room too. For my birthday last year, he presented me with, and I'll obscure part of it, but a paper Bitcoin wallet that contained one Bitcoin. And at the time that he gave it to me, one Bitcoin was worth about $10 U.S. for translation. And as you know now, like today, for instance, it hit a high of about $260 per Bitcoin. So having a Bitcoin now seems to, having like one full Bitcoin now seems to mean a little bit more than it did back then. So I'm suddenly in possession of quite a nice birthday gift. I need to go back and thank Wes again for...
Yeah, it kind of sucked out when you first got it, but now it actually is paying off. That's a pretty good deal.
Right.
That's the best kind of birthday present, right?
Yeah. Well, and we were having a little discussion over lunch, actually. I had lunch with Wes and talked a little bit about it. So there are a lot of merchants now that accept Bitcoins, and they'll even give pretty decent discounts on the purchase price of things if you pay by Bitcoin. And there's a couple of reasons why. One is they don't have to deal with the Visa transaction fees. It's an immediate transaction. They have control of the money immediately, and with the way that the Bitcoin is deflating right now, tomorrow it could be worth twice as much. So if they sold you something worth about $10 right now, by tomorrow the value of the Bitcoin that they received, or the portional of the Bitcoin, could actually elevate up to about $20. So the way things are going.
Right. Now, I wonder if, and we talked about this earlier, is if there's if the increase in price is merely justified by the level of interest that people now have in Bitcoins, the curiosity associated with it, or somebody's trying to manipulate the market. And the reason we talked a little bit about market manipulation was due to the distributed denial of service attacks that had been launched against a couple of the exchanges. And so we don't really have a one cause the other sort of issue here that's clear yet. But I wonder if there are attackers that are legitimately trying to manipulate the price by attacking the site?
I think there's no doubt that that's going on.
Okay.
And but it's sort of the equivalent of day trading. So they are definitely manipulating the price through DDoS attacks, but in doing so, their gains tend to be like sort of the swings that we see on a daily basis, not not the overall skyrocketing values that where it's changing sort of on a weekly basis. So what they're doing is they go in and wait till it hits a fairly high level, and they sell off whatever they've got, and then they DDoS it, which causes traffic issues. People panic, and they start selling off bitcoins. And when it reaches a point where you know they feel like they've created enough panic and they've dropped the value enough, they go back in and they buy, and they stop the DDoS attack. They go in, they make a big bulk purchase, and then just hang out for a while again, and the value starts going back up again. So. Yeah, they're impacting it, but they're really we're probably talking about an impact that occurs over the course of hours, not days or weeks. If you read some of the investment bloggers who are talking about actually going in and investing in bitcoins, there are some reasons why they think that even though everybody agrees there's probably a bubble involved, they don't think number one that the bubble is crested, or number two, that it's going to drop significantly in the near future, and that's because the limited number of bitcoins that are available. So you've got sort of a limited supply, and right now we've got almost unlimited demand. There's a waiting list for people who want verified accounts and access to be able to trade and deal in bitcoins. So there is still a vast amount of interest coming in, and unless something changes there significantly, I think the value is going to continue to rise for at least a little bit.
Well, Doug, I find it interesting that you have a Bitcoin in paper form, because that is completely not how they were designed to be used in a paper form. Have you converted that paper into a digital into digital form?
I did actually probably 5 minutes prior to the meeting here. I was still working out the details because I wanted to make sure I got it right and didn't mess something up. So actually, there's a. Did you guys discuss the fact last time that they estimate that approximately 10% of the bitcoins in circulation right now have been stolen in one form or another?
We have seen that figure before.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff going on in the background with people creating worms or viruses that are actually specifically targeting Bitcoin wallets in people's computers. So keeping it in digital format is actually kind of unsafe. So the paper format, really, what it does is it basically has a printout of your private key. So you've got the Bitcoin address and the private key, and with those two pieces of information, you can access the value in there. If you have the address, that's only one half of the value, because people can. I mean, the addresses would be like IP addresses. You know, you can just guess an IP address and hopefully hit something. There might be a Bitcoin that's there and it might have value, but unless you have the private key, you can't unlock the value. So. What I have, what the piece of paper is, again covering it, on the back there's actually the information regarding the Bitcoin address itself, and then it also has the private key printed out. And so prior to the meeting here, what I did was I went in and I created my own wallet on... can't remember which one. Blockchain. Yep. So I created a blockchain wallet, and then I imported. There was a space where it said, you know, import a paper wallet. And by importing the paper wallet, what it did was it asked me to put in the private key. Yeah. Actually, that was all it needed. It needed the private key, and it told me that there was one Bitcoin value there, and that I could load it into my digital wallet, which I did. So now I have one Bitcoin of value there. And this is what I don't know about, and the theory behind it, which is, I don't know if that means that the value now exists just in my wallet, or if, like, it can only exist in one place at a time, and I'm not quite sure how that works. So, like, if I transferred...
I think it could exist in multiple places, you just can't double spend it.
Okay.
Right, that's... like, if somebody happened to get a copy of your wallet, mm-hmm. unencrypted... It's basically a race to who spends it first, essentially. So if somebody got your wallet, if they exchange it for cash or spent it or whatever, then they would essentially win the race. If you spend it first, then you essentially win the race.
The second one would be flagged as invalid.
Okay. So that I was hoping to accomplish before the meeting as well, but I didn't get a chance to. I'm really curious about the process of actually spending the Bitcoin. And so it's been a really kind of a cool thing to have gotten this because it gives me the opportunity to experiment around without having to have put in much of an investment myself. So
yeah, that is a good point. Several sites that do online wallets have been knocked off, and people have either lost bitcoins or there's been a fairly significant security breach. Would you consider using kind of local software to store that in a wallet, or was the online one the better option, or is it not? I mean, what are your thoughts there?
I haven't really come to a good conclusion about that. I mean, obviously, it's kind of like trust your own equipment versus trust somebody else's. You know, somebody who's set up, if they were, you know, set up to be like a banking site and had those kinds of resources at their disposal, I would think they might be better outfitted to prevent a security breach. Than a personal computer, especially if you're just a normal guy who, you know, you use your computer, but, you know, you don't really pay as much attention to some of the security aspects. That's why the paper wallet was actually one of the recommendations, because if you printed it out and you got it sort of out of your computer, then somebody would physically have to find that paper. It's almost kind of antithetical to what we think of in security, because there's the whole joke about the post-it note on your monitor, and that's essentially what you've done, is take a cash value and put it in a post-it note that, you know, you stick under your keyboard.
Right. Interesting. I wonder if just having good local security and using the software on your local machine wouldn't be safer, but who knows? It's hard to say.
And it probably would be. I actually wanted to sort of experience the concept of transferring funds or working through those, and I wasn't sure which would be the easier way to do it. I thought I'd try it online and see how that worked, but I may change my mind on that. So,
right.
Have you backed up your Bitcoin? Do you have a second copy of it somewhere?
Yes. So that was part of the blockchain wallet. It's basically you click a button and you can save those details.
Well, that's
Doug,
good.
Can you describe how you split the value of a Bitcoin? That part's still a little unclear to me. Can you? You said you stored your Bitcoins. You have about $200 worth of currency there. So. If you're working with a vendor, I mean, does it have to be on a certain incremental value? I mean, if you need to spend $5.55, can you give the equivalent of a Bitcoin, or is there some leftover that you get back in currency?
If I understand correctly, your wallet stores And see, this is where it gets a little fuzzy to me. It is almost infinitely divisible, and if you look at some of the decimal point numbers involved, it gets really almost infinitesimally small when you consider like what you're dealing with, portions of what would be a U.S. coin. So if I understand correctly, you can split off, like you said, $5.52 value of worth of a Bitcoin, and it'll do the calculation out to the nth decimal point, and you can actually give that amount to a vendor, and you can retain the rest in your wallet. How exactly that works from the Bitcoin perspective, I'm not for certain yet. So that's something that I would need to look more into as well.
Yeah, Mike, you may recall we talked about subdividing a Bitcoin out to 8 decimal places. Yeah. Unfortunately, I have a fire alarm going off in my building.
Oh, is that what that is?
So I'm going to mute myself, and I'll let you guys carry on with the conversation.
You need to leave. Is this...
I'll be back.
You know, I noticed that his screen was looking a little fuzzy there. You know, is there the smoke filtering into his office?
Oh. Well, Keith was saying you can split a Bitcoin by up to 8 decimal places, which is a pretty very minuscule sum of money at the moment, even with it at 200. It would have to go very, very, very high in order for that to, you know, that's a 0.00002 cents, essentially.
Right.
So that is... Well,
yeah, I was curious about, I'm assuming that the that it's pretty much automated for the person spending the currency, that they, you know, that it takes care of that for them. So it's kind of like just taking the money out of your account, essentially. And that behind the scenes, it's managing it down to the infinite decimal places that it needs to.
Yeah. It's I don't know how it works. It must be a nature of the function or whatever they used to do it. So I don't know how they do it. But one other thing we talked about, Doug, was the anonymity of a Bitcoin and how it kind of is both a detriment and a positive aspect of the coin. I mean, basically, Bitcoins are untraceable. So, you know, if you steal a Bitcoin from somebody, there's no real way to tell the path that a Bitcoin went. It's essentially an untraceable currency.
Yes, it is. And you're right. I mean, there are some benefits and some detriments to that. So obviously from a perspective, so say like the criminal aspect, of course, you've got it could be used as a black market currency, and I believe it is being used as a black market currency. And then you've got also the thing where it's basically just, you know, maybe I want to do something that isn't illegal or immoral or anything else. I just don't care to have the whole world know because it's stored in my Visa credit card accounts, you know? So it does. I mean, there's kind of like, there's some good aspects and some bad aspects.
Well, it seems like it's the advantage of carrying around cash today. You know, there's some purchases that you just want to make with cash and not, like you said, on your credit card. So it gives you the benefit of being able to do that, but it's also the vulnerability. You know, if someone takes your wallet and you got $500 in there, there's really no way to prove it. And it's sort of the same with Bitcoins.
Yeah, there's two other aspects to that, though, that actually I would say make it better than cash. And one is if you took $50,000 cash and put it in a briefcase and then attempted to go through and take it to, say, Vegas, because you wanted to gamble, you'd have a hard time getting through the airport with that these days. So But you can obviously have your Bitcoin wallet, and you can wire the money or withdraw the money from just about any location. The other thing is the sort of international aspect, since it's a global currency rather than associated with a particular country. You can actually transfer funds easily between countries using Bitcoins. So what are the ramifications of that? I don't know. I mean, it could have some big ramifications, both from the perspective of, you know, using it to for criminal aspects, and, you know, using it to get your money to offshore accounts, or funding terrorism, or, you know, I mean, there's plenty of opportunities there for bad actors.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier, too, about the distributed denial of service attacks that have been taking place, and how you can kind of, how an attacker, in a way, can benefit from that and kind of help control the prices and, you know, sell high, buy low. It seems like there's a great incentive to do that, but I have to wonder if it continues and goes on for an extended period of time, it almost seems like the casual user could kind of catch on as well and say, well, here's my opportunity. I think it's near the high price. You know, I'm they're under attack. This is a good time to try to go out and buy as soon as I can. Do you think as these things continue on that it'll actually become a matter of it won't be as disruptive, it'll just be kind of expected norm of business for these guys, and it won't really make the price fluctuate like it is today?
Yeah, you might have something there. So maybe it would become the norm. I also think that some of the big players like Mt. Gox have been really sort of taken aback or surprised by the fact that the DDoS attacks have been so effective. You know, if you go out and you look at some of their blog postings and things like that, their news articles, they were fairly disappointed because they felt that they had put into implementation some pretty good DDoS protection, and it failed them. So the question is, you know, they may be able to up their game a little bit or fix the issues that they've run into and sort of help mitigate that, or maybe it will just become expected behavior and it'll just be a part of dealing with, you know, the minor fluctuations of the market, so to speak.
Well, one other interesting thing that I kind of noticed when I was reading some of the myths and how Bitcoin works is the how they handle double spending, which is essentially it's a peer-to-peer network, and the transactions as they happen, they kind of flow out this peer-to-peer network. And so there's this log of transactions that every Bitcoin client essentially has. And one thing that was pointed out is that as long as there are more trusted Bitcoin clients than untrusted Bitcoin clients, then this method works. So essentially you need to have these big players, you need to have trusted clients on the Bitcoin network in order for the Bitcoin to really function. If the bad guys outnumber the good guys, then suddenly the currency essentially collapses on itself, from my understanding of how it works.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I think that's a good synopsis of it as well. Which actually makes the sudden influx of interest in the Bitcoin actually a good thing, because what it's going to do is legitimize the Bitcoin, and we're going to have people who have good business models for how to monetize the third-party aspect. You know, how can I provide the services to make the Bitcoin work properly and make some money off of that? And they're going to have to be sort of legitimate players in the realm and trusted providers. So I think we're going to see an influx of perhaps even standard companies that suddenly, you know, the people that we, maybe even banks, I don't know exactly how they would play in the aspect, but, you know, who are like, well, yeah, we need to get in on this, and we need to provide sort of that trusted aspect to it as well. So,
yeah, and I think there's a lot of truth to that. you know, I think it's one of those things where there's no such thing as bad publicity. You know, we were talking about on Monday's podcast, because of the attacks that were happening, and correct me if I'm wrong, Preston, but I think the high at that point was like 187, and now it's like 266 in a matter of just a couple days. So, I mean, that's pretty amazing considering it's only been 2 days later.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning, and so that leaves me with a question of you know, when you're looking at an increase that's happening that quickly, and you have some, then the question is, it becomes basically like an investment. You know, is it time to divest myself of this investment, or do I ride it and see how much higher it goes? You know. There's actually a Reddit article out there that was really interesting where I guess he was sort of one of the original Bitcoin miners, had actually mined and saved, and he had just, I mean, I don't know, he was just kind of doing it for the fun of it, and had been saving all his Bitcoins rather than spending them, and he posted on Reddit that basically with the increase in volume, or in price, that he had actually, the value of his Bitcoins were now over $1 million. He was pulling some of it out to buy a house, and was just talking about, you know, what else should he do with it, and so that's pretty incredible. Wesley mentioned at lunch that back in the starting days when the value of it was so low that there were people who bought pizzas with Bitcoins, and the value of the Bitcoins at that time were low enough that it was multiple Bitcoins for a pizza. And now it was essentially like it was a $1,000 pizza, you know.
Well, I also wonder, back when Bitcoins were of such little value, how many of them just went away? I mean, how many got lost? And it's like, well, this is worth nothing. I'm going to format my hard drive, you know, and forget about these stupid Bitcoins and just leave it at that. You know, I mean, how many people did that and basically threw away a winning lottery ticket, I guess you can say, that they had to wait a few years to redeem. But you know, it's now worth a lot of money. I wonder how many people did that.
I'm sure there's got to be a couple, and they're probably kicking themselves now. So, but yeah, I mean, they do talk about there's a certain percentage that just get lost. If you don't have the private key, then that block is inaccessible after that. So.
Yeah, it's crazy how much they've gone up in value so quickly. But yeah, looking over their information, if I could give you financial advice, Doug, according to them, you know, it's good to hold on to a full Bitcoin. The day will come when owning a full Bitcoin will be quite valuable because, you know, they imagine that it'll be split up more and more as less and less of them are made available until the final amounts all been released. So that's according to their literature. You can take that or leave that, but I think they believe it's going to go quite high.
Yeah. And some of what I read is that, you know, for investments right now, that makes it premium for investments. But I don't know if you guys discussed the fact that there are some countries that are actually looking at it as a possibility for actually a national currency of sorts. With the deflationary stuff going on, that doesn't make it as good for a national currency. But it does make it great for an investment. So,
yeah, I think if I had one, if I was in your position, I had one, I'd spend about $10 of it. And that way, if it deflated down to nothing, I'd feel like I got the initial value out of it. And then just see where it'd go from there. I'm not sure I'm going to jump into the market at $200 a Bitcoin, but yeah. Who knows, maybe 2 years from now there'll be $400 or $500, or who knows.
That's actually kind of where I am too, Mike. I kind of feel like, you know, I just to get the novelty out of it, I kind of want to spend at least a portion of it on something and go, oh wow, look, you know, this is what I got from it. And then it doesn't really matter where it goes from there. I mean, if it went up, that'd be cool. If it didn't, then, you know, I still got the the enjoyment of trying it out, you know?
Yep. Well, I think we're pretty much done, but unfortunately, I'm not sure if we can end this broadcast without Keith actually being here.
No, I don't think we can.
The final thing to say, is he the guy that closes it out?
He's the one that pushes the button that takes us off the air.
I see. So we might have some ramblings here, huh?
So if we all hang up, then it'll just be Keith's empty whiteboard on the broadcast until he finally gets back to his computer and hangs up the thing. So I wonder if they actually had a real fire alarm over there. So it might be a while. I don't know.
It might be. Yeah, I wonder. Maybe we could text him or something.
Well, I think I'm going to wrap it up anyway, and we can all hang up. And then we'll just leave Keith hanging there, and we can edit the audio out.
Yeah, we can edit the audio. I guess for those that are watching, be prepared that the feed may continue on for some time after this.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thanks for the insights, Doug. It's nice to talk to somebody who actually has a Bitcoin. I tried to mine some back a while back, but I had no success.
So since you mined, did you set up like an online wallet? I mean, do you have an account someplace?
It's been quite a while. I didn't have an online wallet. I was just, as far as I remember, when you got a Bitcoin, it just pretty much put it on your computer. In a folder or something like that. So that's what I recall it happening. But I never got one, or 25, I guess. When you successfully mine, you get 25. So, and I think there's a point when it goes up to 50.
It was the other way around, actually. Early on, miners, when they mined a block, got 50. And then it was when they reached the halfway point of all the blocks being found, the value of each block dropped to 25.
Okay. All right. So maybe, I don't know if I was there at the 50 or the 25, but I didn't get it. I didn't get any. I don't think I was willing to pay the electrical bill for the whole thing. So
if only you'd known.
Yeah, if only I'd known. Even then, I'm not sure if it would have worked out. I don't know, because so as you said, the fan goes crazy. It's using.
Does.
Yeah. So, well, all right.
All right. Sounds good.
Well, we can wrap it up. I think we've gone for over a half hour. So we were shooting for 20 minutes. So thank you to Doug Couch, Keith Watson, and Mike Hill. I'm Preston Wiley. Have a safe and secure day.